Alrighty. Before we begin our presentation, there have been several situations going on with groups, and I've gotten a lot of groups. If you're having some issues with groups, people not responding back to your groups, calling you back, or setting up times on time, can you please stay afterwards? Because we can have that discussion afterward, because it's causing some problems for a variety of people. We all have a different time zone. We have to do groups, we have to do role plays, and I've gotten numerous emails requesting to switch to groups, switch others to groups, but some groups are working, some groups are not working, and then just because I switch it to a group doesn't mean that's going to work them, and that's becoming a problem. And if you are having in that problem, maybe you, I don't know, meet stay afterwards. I would like to talk to some of you. We will not record that part of it, but it's more than normal than what I've experienced in other classes, which has delayed several people in order to be able to turn in their assignment that's coming up. That was last week's different assignments that is throwing people behind. So, if that has affected you, which I know some of you have has been affected by it, continue to keep me posted. I will not harm your grade or allow that to harm your grade, because I have been in group projects before where people did not respond and it was very frustrating. But the nature of this course, with the assignments, we really need to have people to help each other out. And in order to do that, so we can have some consistency each week, as you've had CBT or whatever the theory is, you practice within your group and you do that. I just really want to be able to see some of you in action from that standpoint. Years ago, we had you do it all in class, and then now they break it up where you do it individually. And my Thursday night classes, some of you may have been in my 5004 weeks ago for a while. And it's different since they changed the system. So, any questions on that before we start? Any comments? All right. Well, then stay afterwards so we can make sure that we are on the same page. This helps your learners, people, yourself. It helps you because people just don't want to be late. I know different situations have come up, and a lot of people have sent me their individual issues, but come on, let's work with each other, please. I would appreciate that. Because just like tonight, we're gonna be talking about trauma. And we all have enough trauma in our lives and being adults, and what's happening with this country over the next week and all these other things. There's a lot of stress going on. And so people have a lot of trauma in our lives, and it's not the easiest topic.
Thank
But
you.
we're gonna get through. Tonight we're going to start off with our song, and as we talk about trauma and childhood trauma and other issues from that standpoint. But like I told you before, I like to share a song. Not that I'm gonna sing, but one night. I have done that before, but not tonight. Here we go. Did everyone, put on their mute, please. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Have you seen my
I
childhood?
oh, what?
I'm searching for the understands me. child, but pardon me. People say I'm not okay, 'cause I love such elementary things. It's been my fate to compensate for the child.
Trauma, childhood trauma. What stood out for you as you listened to those words? Childhood.
It reminded me of how sometimes you talk about the parentification of children who've been in abusive homes who end up having to be the parent. And it made me think about that when he's like, because obviously you're seeing kids and all in it, and he was a child, but he never really had what we would consider a normal childhood.
A normal childhood. What's a normal childhood?
I guess an unabusive one is what I mean.
I hear you. I ask myself that question all the time. What's normal? Daddy, mommy, two kids, car, two garage, house, car, a cat, a dog, a parakeet. Is that normal? Have you seen my childhood? In order to understand me, Oliver James Davis, have you really taken the time to see my childhood? What else stood out for you? We're going to talk about this tonight.
I saw the way he was sitting almost in a vulnerable state, just very closed offish, very shy, didn't want to kind of very closed off.
What does that mean to you?
Almost trying to protect his inner self, didn't want to put himself out there.
If you sat in front of my grandmother and I had my arms, I can still see it. She's been gone now for 23 years. But I could still see it. I'm sitting on her couch and I would plop down and I would have my arms like this and she'll look over at me. She said, "Boy, what you holding on to?" I said, "Huh?" She said, "What you holding on to?" She said, "What you holding on to?" Which means what's bothering you? What am I holding on to? Within the last 24 hours, I've had four people to die that I know. And so on Facebook, it's been crazy. What am I holding on to? Today's pain. You couldn't see that in my bow tie. You couldn't see that. I'm dressed up in Halloween colors. What are our kids holding on to when they come to our schools, when they come to our therapy sessions? And grandma, if she saw you holding like that, because this is a vulnerable state. Anybody scared of turbulence on the plane? Besides me? Okay, yeah, I know. Okay, oh, I know some of y'all don't want to admit it, but I am. I will admit that I have anxiety. And I'm sitting up there like, in fact, I had a blow on the plane. The flight attendant said, "You need a therapist," one time. I said, "I am a therapist. Just pass me the bag, please. Just pass me the bag." Goodness. And I held on and held on. The best time I had a nun sitting next to me. She had a little rosary. I said, "Pray for me, please." We're going down, at least we'll go down with a prayer. So, it's amazing what we hold on to, the trauma, the fear that we hold on to.
I think today a lot of the kids fear their safety going to school. And I remember going to school, I didn't have to have those fears.
When they get to school, they fear walking, going to the bus stop. We have fights at the bus stop. Little girl came to me this morning and this girl had threatened her. I said, "Are you on the bus with her?" "No." That's where I would really have to start off with. Are they on the bus? Because if they're on the bus, I have to go talk to the bus driver. I have to have another setup. Are they at your bus stop? Where is the fear coming from? What's holding them in? Where's making them vulnerable? You notice where he was sitting.
I think sometimes, because I also work in a middle school, and what they fear, because when they get to school, they've left home, they've left the responsibilities, they've left that there. They have a whole different set of anxieties. How do I look? How am I dressed? Are people talking about me? Is the gossip train circling to the point that it's created so much anxiety? We've had three fights this week that they happen like just at the edge of school and the library, so they don't think that there's any ramifications. And now it's created the fear of that safety of I leave home and I come to school and then I leave again. Is something going to happen to me?
Yeah. Safety, scary. I can't focus if I'm going to get beat up. Others are rushing up there today. I saw some kids rushing because they want to make sure they get breakfast. They don't get breakfast and not lunch. They don't get fed. Breakfast and lunch is the only meals they get. I live here in South Bend, Indiana, and it snows here a lot, sometimes 15, 20 plus inches. And when they just say, "South Bend school is closed," I say, "Yay!" Jump back in my bed and I slept like a little kid. And then I thought about it. When we know a storm is coming, we can do a little bit better. We have, but sometimes this shows up on us because we have lake effects now. And that means that that day, those kids won't get fed. So as I jump up and down, For them, they're not going to jump up and down because they have to stay in the house with no food. Makes you think again. Have you seen my childhood? My childhood doesn't like to have school closed because my meals are gone. My breakfast is gone. My lunch is gone. My afternoon snack is gone. Or I have to stay in an abusive house. During COVID, it was rough. More challenges, more issues, and everything else was amazing. Have you seen my childhood? Some of the words. It says this. Before you judge me, try hard to love me. Before you judge me, try hard to love me. He said it several times through the song. What comes to mind?
I actually wrote those words down when the song was playing. I
Yeah.
wrote "Before you judge me, try to love me" as the thing that stuck out to me most. And then next to it, I wrote, "Instead of just looking at what you see initially, superficially, take the time to see me as a story and
Tell
my
me
past."
more about the story.
I remember watching like one of the first things that comes to mind right now is just this Instagram post that I saw some time ago, and this woman said it in another way. She says, "I am not just this event. I am a series of events." And they all connect somehow. She's going on this rant and rave, but I was like, yeah. So in that moment, as somebody had like said, "You look crazy or you look cuckoo." She's like, "Fine, I look cuckoo. But this is just one event. You didn't see all the other ones leading up to this." And right. So it's like all the different narratives, all of the different roles we play, all the different masks that we wear. Like somebody said, going to school, there's a whole new set of, I think Kimberly said, going to school, there's a whole new set of anxieties, the new set at home, because we're wearing different masks, we're putting on different roles, we are fulfilling different narratives. All led by like different archetypes or what our pre like what we you know our preconceptions and our misconceptions, or maybe the some of the things that we have right about the
Yeah.
world, carrying all of that with us all the time.
Before you judge me,
Yeah, to
hear
be
my
seen.
series of stories.
Yes. It's so complex, but at the root, like hopefully we can find some commonalities, at least through feelings, if nothing else,
Okay, class, you've just heard our whole presentation for tonight. Thank you. Have a good night.
Good,
You summed it up nicely.
it's my
But
anniversary today, 21 years.
oh, cool. And you are different in your snapshot today than you were 21 years ago.
Oh yes, I am.
And seeing the different series of my life is interesting when I look at them. The good parts, the sad parts. Today I've been going through a lot of pictures with my friends who have passed, and I saw some of them. I'm like, wow. I've learned to keep pictures. I've learned to keep pictures of my victories and I've keep pictures of my losses because they're all different series of me. If I only keep pictures of my victories, that's unrealistic. And I don't know how to plan for downtimes. I've only keep pictures of my sad times. That's also unrealistic. And it's too depressing. I don't know how to make it. Keeping pictures of both balances me out. Have you seen my childhood? He says, before you loved me. But another one says, the painful youth I've had. What pains have youth had? What's been their pains before they come to see you or while they are still seeing you? Young man today, I've known him since now I'm going on my second year. He asked to see me today. I was rushing, doing something else, and I was in the office. And he said, is Mr. Davis there? And then I looked out because when somebody just calls my name, I know they have personally requested and I recognize his voice. And I said, I have something else to do, but can you wait for a few minutes? He said, yeah, I'll wait. And I was looking at him because I said, he's not in trouble. What's going on? And so after I finished my other situation, I called him in. I said, what's up, man? My parents announced to me this week they're going through a divorce. And I said, it's hard to focus, isn't it? He said, We just paused for a few minutes. They said to top it off, my dad got arrested this weekend too. Here we are on Thursday. He couldn't focus this weekend and asked to see me. He could play Uno all the time last year. Pretty good player. In sixth grade, and so I hadn't seen him, and he came and asked for me today. We just sat there. I said, I need you to check in with me for a few weeks because this is not going away today. He says, I know. The painful youth I have. Have you seen my childhood? He checked in for about 15 minutes and he sent him on back to class. So sometimes we're checking for 5 minutes, other times we're checking for 10. He said, I know where you are. I said, cool. Kind of cool having a 12-year-old come look for you. Share his pain. Get a little pep talk and head on back to class. What's your thoughts?
I really particularly heard him when he said the wonder of childhood.
Go for it. Tell me about that. Said, well, go for it. Tell me.
Oh, and so it made me think of not only like the admiration of wonder of childhood, but also of like and the mysticism behind childhood of like, you know, how this big world that we don't know, but also these unfamiliar things that that children experience that they don't quite understand, like particularly like a divorce. Like, so what is all of that about? And so how do they figure out that? And then so how does that play into the rest of their life? And so that's where my mind went when I heard that, what he said, based on the topic that you're talking about.
I told him, I said, if you had asked me that several years ago, I really wouldn't understand. But now that I've gone through it, I said, it's crazy. He nodded his head. It's crazy. The wonder, you think about wonder, you think about and something that's great, grand, and wonderful. Wonder Woman. Child of wonder, child of that, you know, wonder, something great. Christmas time, wonder. But sometimes that wonder is not so great. Painful youth I've had. And at a master's level, I use my systems theory as a camera. I didn't add this to my thing, but I'll go to it real quick before I go to my next one. I have to, because my head is there. My head is there. I'm going to go to there.
What I really appreciate about the Google Career Certificate is you're not just sticking your nose in.
And I look at these cameras at the bachelor's level. They may just have a simple cell phone camera. At the master's level and higher, as we get to the graduate level, we start using these professional cameras as we look for the painful childhood. What's the difference of these kind of cameras versus the ones that's on your cell phone?
This one is specifically made for taking pictures or by capturing an image or a moment, or whereas the other device, it's kind of like being a jack of all trades and having all of that, but this one having like focus.
Having focus, and it's specifically made. You are being specifically trained in this course and with the MSW to see things that you did not see prior to coming in here. You may have seen some jacks of all trade things, but you will be able to hopefully, as you study and practice with the Sanchez family and all these other ones, you're going to be able to zero in with that cannon and see things that others may not see. where they see a son, you see the pain in that boy, in that girl. You see the pain in that mama, the embarrassment. You feel it, and you hear it in a different way. And you're able to adjust your camera to see it. What's your thoughts?
I think that with this camera too, the difference is you can edit a lot more.
Tell me more about that editing.
You know, you can do basic edits on like an iPhone with your pictures, but I mean, I don't have a professional camera, but I'm assuming it has more functionality to like Photoshop, to take out, I mean, yeah, Photoshop, like take out stuff that's there, add stuff that's not there, change the coloring, the brightness, the settings, and things of that nature. So you can really, and it depends on who's operating the camera too. You know, a professional photographer can really take nothing and make it into something with a lot of editing.
A lot of editing. They go into that dark room and being able to see things. We're learning how to work and edit in that dark room to be understand, to understand the painful use, to hear issues about the childhood, the searching for the wonder in youth. People say that I'm strange. You'll be able to see strange things through this camera. And then they don't become so strange to you anymore. When I first got to middle school, I had not really experienced, I've heard about it and read about it because being a therapist, but I had not experienced all the cutting, childhood cutting that I went through. A few years ago, sixth grade was cutting like crazy. I mean, it was just like a fad going through sixth grade, cutting after cutting, parents coming up there. And this time of year, I'm getting called, Mr. Davis, Mr. Davis. Oh, sir, come and see my friend. I'm like, you know, open up, take the arm. Me and the nurse, we've been there so many times. Kids cutting, cutting. It was strange to me at first, but then it became normal. I hated it. It became normal, but it really did. And having to see the pain behind all the cutting that went on. And it wasn't just the girls. It wasn't just one race. We had boys cutting, girls cutting. Cutting their arms, cutting their shirts, cutting that. They would rather focus on the pain of having a painful arm than going through the pain of their parents' divorce or going through, or we have several kids that were going through transitions. One started sixth grade, seventh grade from being a boy to being a girl and the transition of all of that had to go through. And so just a lot of pain. And so what seems strange to me when I started focusing in on my camera, my professional camera, learning more about it, really became clearer to me. Your thoughts? The camera.
I would agree with what you're saying. I'm just taking, I've done social type work for a long time. And working with CPS when I first started, was seeing things from a very small lens, like, you know, seeing the worst that people can do to themselves and each other and their children. But as I learned more and I grew more in the profession, and obviously this is my second master, so learning through that process, and now this, I've got like the big lens going now where things are so much bigger than that moment and so much bigger than this child abuse and neglect case. It's not just one moment, but that's also not necessarily always what you see first, like a bad parent, an abusive parent. There's a bigger picture and a bigger lens. And sometimes it does take those little minute details that you can see with that bigger lens to be able to pinpoint where some of the difficulty your trauma is and how to better help them.
Yeah. Years ago, I was working with a group of students and the person, we would go on home visits. And when they were giving their reports, the person was talking about, well, when I walked in the house, there were roaches, there was this, there were that. And I finally stopped and I said, excuse me. I said, who's your client? The roach or the person? Uh-huh. I said, who's your client? You started off talking about the roaches and things that were in the house. Yeah, but there were roaches, but why did you start off with that? Was the roach your client? Well, I didn't want them on my clothes. You can clean your clothes. You take your clothes to laundry. You can do other things. Who's your client? When were you focusing in? Was your camera focused so much on that roach, that spider? I'm not saying to ignore it. I understand. I've had to do home visits. I had to do home assessments. I understand that I've had to write up to how the house was not so tidy and other things. I'm not going to ignore it. But is my main part of the lens on the roaches that are running up and down the house or on my client? And so I will pause. What are your, when you go and says, is it on the smell? There's a smell of poverty that is really true. I've worked in Alabama, I've worked in Ohio, I've worked in Indiana, I've worked in Michigan, and all four states. And when I've gone to homes of poverty, I've done home visits in all four states, in various cities in these states. But poverty smells the same to me, whether it's country poverty. Well, rural poverty has a little bit different because you're gonna add some animals, some chickens, and some dogs, and some other stuff into that. You're gonna spice it up some, because everybody gets, it's amazing. But still, poverty has a certain smell. Who's your client? The roach? What do you see when you walk into a home visit? When you see somebody that comes in, mom is not dressed right, daddy's not dressed right, or they got silver teeth and missing tooth. What do you see when you're talking to them? Have you see? Some things that look strange to you because you may have grown up in a two-parent home, mom, dad, or it may look strange for you. Or you may have grown up in a single home, or you may have grown up with mom and mom, or dad and dad. So now you're working with another family because now once you get out of your own home and you start working with other homes, things may look strange to you. In one of my classes at where I was working my master's at Ohio State, I was the only African-American in the class. And they, every time they had a diversity question, kept asking me and asking me. And one of my classmates said to me, I know you get tired of asking, answering the questions when we do that. I said, yeah, I'm kind of sick of it. But she told me this, and I'll never forget it. She said, you're the first African-American male I've ever met in person. See, I grew up in an all-white neighborhood, went to all-white schools. I went to all-white churches. I went to everything white. Everything in my life has been white. I came here to school. You're the first person. And when I went to my caseload is all black. You're the first one. So everything you're saying, I'm writing down because I have no experience in working with my caseload. And I said, okay. And sometimes I've switched. What? That was strange for her. What's been strange for you? Different populations, different backgrounds are strange. What's your thoughts when you think of strange working with different backgrounds?
I worked for a long time as a service coordinator. From that, I worked in APS for a long time. So I got to see a lot of different backgrounds, cultures, the way people live. Sometimes, you know, one ethnicity or one set race, like you kind of already know what you're going into. And sadly, I would see a name and I already became biased or prejudiced. And, I'm from Pennsylvania. So we have a lot of trailer parks and stuff, you know, up in the Poconos or up in Bethlehem and, you know, those places. And as soon as I saw a name, I would tell my supervisor, like, I don't want to go there. And she would say, why, Trinidad? And it was sad. And I would say, these are my reasons why. And you know, when you work in that field for so long, you almost become you become immune, but you almost recognize where you're going to walk into before you even walk into the situation just by a name. Mm-hmm. And I would have to put on my rain boots because I always kept a pair of rain boots in my car. And walk into the home and just put on the face like, okay, here I am. I'm here for you. I'm here to provide for whatever you need and just keep it moving. But yes, during my time, I developed some type of bias and prejudice just because of a name.
Thank you for being honest, because it's being real. And our challenge is, how do we not do that? Number one is, we have to realize we are doing it. Just because of names, people can look at people's zip codes. As a city council person, I can look at zip codes and or streets. And when somebody comes before me, I know exactly, well, not exactly, I have a great idea of what's going on just by your zip code. Insurance companies do that too. If you have certain zip codes in cities, you pay more insurance on your car, your house, than other zip codes, just because of the zip code where it's located, or the assumption that there is more crime. I live on the southwest side of the South Bend, Indiana, and people think that there's more crime on the southwest side or on the south. If you look at the actual record, it's not. But a lot of times that's portrayed on the media. We have another shooting on the west side of town. When there's a shooting on the east side of town, they would say there was a shooting in South Bend. Okay? They would say a shooting in South Bend. But when it's on the west side, there was a shooting on the west side. I have never heard them say there was a shooting on the east side. Or seldom did they say that. It's normally, if it's on the east side, shooting on the east, shooting in South Bend, it was on the west side, they identify as west side. So those kind of things play into how people see going to people's homes, just by our media.
When I would tell my supervisor, I would almost be like, leave me in the city. I don't want to go into rural areas. Leave me in the city. I'd be like, leave me with my Hispanic people. Don't send me up into the rural areas. I don't want to go to the trailer parks. I don't want to go into the nice houses. No, leave me here. I feel safer in the city.
I was telling my daughter the other night, my grandfather and my dad's side lived in a trailer park. And grandma lived in an interesting house. As a kid, we was just going to grandpa's house. It was when I got into older life, then I realized granddaddy was living in a trailer park. As a kid, it was just granddaddy's house. I never thought that we were going there. I mean, he lived in Tampa, Florida, and all those hurricanes and everything. We went to trailer park, the storms. And it's amazing to me now when I see trailer parks, when I used to look forward to just going to grandparents' house. And now I never equated trailer park as low class people, because trailer parks met grandpa's house. Just interesting how I saw it out of my camera, how I saw it, the world out of my camera. And now how things have jaded my vision, and how I have to clean off my camera because my lenses have been stained by life's prejudice and other things that have happened as I look at my camera. Some of that comes from houses that we hear. As we look at childhood trauma and issues, we have to deal with the issue of disappointment. Some of you may have heard this poem, and I like for somebody to read that poem. Let me put it. It's called Children Live What They Learn. And it says he. I know we deal with pronouns now. It's written 79, but just go with he or she, whatever you want to go with. Somebody volunteer and go for it.
Sure. I'll do it. Okay. If a child lives with criticism, he learns to condemn. If a child lives with hostility, he learns to fight. If a child lives with ridicule, he learns to be shy. If a child lives with shame, he learns to feel guilty. If a child lives with tolerance, he learns to be patient. If a child lives with encouragement, he learns confidence. If a child lives with praise, he learns to appreciate. If a child lives with fairness, he learns justice. If a child lives with security, he learns to have faith. If a child lives with approval, he learns to like himself. If a child lives with acceptance and friendship, he learns to find love in the world.
Thank you. Miss Dorothy Lou Note wrote that as part of her doctorate years ago. Children learn what they live. What stood out for you as you read that? And then we have others to chime in.
I've worked with a lot of children and a lot of students. just in life in general and also in the field. And I love this poem, and reading it, it's so true because, like, specifically, like, if a child lives with criticism, he learns to condemn. Like a student, one of my students, he was super incredibly just judgmental towards the people, like his peers, and he would talk to me about that. This is when I was working in the social work field, but he would talk to me about how they need to do this better, or they need to do that better, and he could have done it better than they could have, and the teacher should have called on him, and just different stuff like that. And in getting to know him over the course of when he was on my caseload, and also getting to know his mom and his grandma, I could see that mom would constantly criticize him of, you could be better than that. You need to be better than that. You know better than that. And then grandma would do the same with mom. So they were kind of stuck in a trauma circle that I can only assume that grandma also had that growing up. So children are like sponges, and the way that the adults in their life love them and care for them, and or don't love them or don't care for them, they soak that up, is as in, that's how I have to be whenever I'm an adult. Not always, but a lot of the times they think of, that's how I have to be, because that's how they are and that's how the world works best for them. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense. Child lives with criticism. Thanks for sharing that. Thanks for reading it. If a child lives with criticism, learns to condemn. If you go back to some of the most critical people that you have, and as I will even say, if an adult lives with has lived with criticism, he or she has learned to condemn. If you know people who are they're very condescending, they're always criticizing people on a regular basis. Take time to hear them. And if you really took time to hear them, you almost could go back and quietly see their Facebooks or whatever. You'll probably pick up some things about them, that they have grown up in a world full of pure criticism. You know good, you know this, you know that. Or they may have gone attended a church service or a worship background that's been very critical and makes them to feel that they always live in hell and going to hell's fire and hell's this and all of that. And it's amazing, by the time they get to third and fourth grade, they're some of the most critical young people. Their bodies are just turning 10, and yet they can be, it's amazing. They're mean. They're more mean. I have fifth grade right in front of me. It's been amazing dealing with some of my fifth graders. You happen to step on them. You mother blankety blank, blank and blank, and your daddy blankety blank. Whoa! Just stepped in, and I did it by accident. Well, they should have known better than to tell on my blankety blank. How did they at 10 years old know how to cuss, and not only cuss, but how to place their cuss and how to criticize so hard on somebody else? And then you call the parent in. And he said, why are you calling my blankety blank phone? And yes, why? What's going on? Oh, okay, I got you. I had to come up here and pick up my blankety blank child and call downtown on you, blankety blank social worker. Okay. You said they're sponges. Yeah, they're sponges. I know why that 10-year-old is cussing. Sounds just like that. Makes me think. Our children pick up so much. Our animals pick up everything that we do. You can tell. Children live with criticism, live with hostility, the ones who are fighting a lot, fussing a lot. They live in that kind of environment, whether it's emotional fights, physical fights, a combination of them all. What's your thoughts? Look, the ones in the purple one, which one stands out for you? It could be the criticism, the hostility, the ridicule, the shame. Which one, when you looked at it or read about it, popped out and say, yeah, I can see that. Or not only the clients, which ones jumped out?
Kind of all of them, but the one specifically is if a child lives with hostility and learns to fight. I've been a foster parent and we had an 8-year-old little boy, an Inuit from Alaska. And he'd been in foster care longer than most, almost 4 years by the time he was placed with me and my family. And he had been in 15 homes prior to my home. He also wasn't seen because he was suffering from like fetal alcohol syndrome and other very serious conditions that maybe not curable, but treatable so that he could live a better life. But all he knew was to fight. That's all he'd ever been around. And then to fight in every foster home because he didn't understand and he had no place to grab from. And until he got in our home where he got the therapies he needed, the support he needed, we actually started working with his family, which was severe alcoholism. He was placed with me because I'm Cherokee. So we had an understanding of what it meant to grow up native. And he didn't even identify, he didn't even know what it meant. What does that mean to be native? What does it mean to be from a tribe or from Alaska? And so it's like all he knew was hostility, and he knew it from not just to family, but to how to fight to survive for all the other homes he had been placed in, for the piece of food he needed, for clothes he needed. He was 8 when he came to us, and he was wearing size 4.5, 5 clothes.
Wow.
He didn't have anything, and he had been in foster care for 3.5 years.
The painful youth I am. Have you seen my childhood? And it goes back to, plus the abandonment issues. Fighting had become his communication. That's the way he communicated through his fights. A lot of the shootings that take place are their communications. I mean, I used to play basketball as a kid. You get in, you foul somebody, you say sorry, you move on, next game, or whatever. Or you may get a little rough, tough, and no big deal. Now people just walk to their cars, come out. You fouled me, I'm gonna shoot you. Like what? You know, and you think about why did they shoot that person? Well, they touched him, or they were looking at him wrong, or whatever. It's just like, it's the way they communicate. It's a different level of communication. And helping people to be able to express how they talk without having to do that is really interesting. And we live in a very hostile world. I mean, once class is over and I turn on CNN and MSNBC and I turn on Fox News and all the other news and hear the whole thing that we are garbage or people are this and people are that or. I mean, commercials are being made off of people who are going through transitions. Commercials are being made of all these different populations of, it's amazing. It's mean. And so when we see our presidential campaigns, our governor campaigns, our United States Senate campaigns, our Congress campaigns, our mayors, our local down to the local level campaigns, blasting each other, genderism, sexism, homophobiaism, all the isms that you can think about on social media and the posts. It's mean. People's like, I mean, it's horrible. And so then you see children pick up that. Children pick up that. What's your thoughts?
Random thought I'm kind of having, or maybe not so random, but it's also I'm seeing this, like the word cyclical is also coming up. So the child that lives with hostility and learns to fight goes out and gets, or is combative, and then that's what's coming back at them too. So it's almost like their behavior is also reinforced. I mean, that's where my mind's at right now, and it's the same for all of them. Like if you live with ridicule and you learn to be shy and you learn to kind of bury yourself in the background, if you will, you may tend to be overlooked. And again, it reinforces that behavior and that feeling.
Shame. Living with shame. My daughter was in a mixed class. When I say mixed class, it was first grade to fourth grade in the little school that she was almost 7 years old. And we were eating dinner that night. She said, "That's enough." I said, "What do you mean that's enough?" She says, "I got to work on my figure." I said, "You got to work on what?" "I got to work on my figure." I was just like, I was so blown away sitting at the table. And I was like, I mean, I expect that maybe when she was a teenager. And then it hit me. She was in a mixed class, Dylan was 6, 7, 8, 19 years old. And the larger girls were getting teased. And she did not want to be one of them. So she stopped, even though I could tell she was really enjoying it because they were getting teased. And I said, wow. That's not something that is just for older people. Younger people are dealing with that. The bully reports I have to write up, being teased, size. For me, I remember when Vanessa Williams won in 1984, first African American to ever win Miss America. And that was interesting because she was light skinned. People who were my complexion didn't win. I mean, that's just what happened. My sister's where my mother was. And so it's amazing how many people felt uncomfortable. I've done a lot of therapy. How many men and women felt uncomfortable having any kind of lights on during their intimate times because they felt embarrassed about themselves, their looks. And a lot of that came from their younger years. You're ugly, you're stupid. And even though a wife or a husband or a partner told them that they were pretty and they loved the way they looked. You just saying that. You just saying that. I don't even know why you're loving me. You could probably find any other woman, or you could find any other man, and all this stuff happening. You just probably picked me because I was the last one, and you had nobody else. I'm sure you're looking at her. Why are you looking at her all the time? And a lot of that argument, it creates that because when they were in those early years, they were teased about being too skinny, too dark, too light, too white, too black, too this, too that. Eyes, there's four eyes, bubble lips, all the stuff. I can remember, I can write down all the stuff that I was caught between K through fifth grade, and there's some vicious stuff. And here I am, 56 years old, and I still have to deal with that mess in my mind. What's your thoughts? Shame.
I just think about how, like, when I was an adolescent in like the, I don't know, the early 2000s, and the fashion trends at the time, like the low-rise jeans and like the crop tops and like all the stuff, and now it's coming back. And I've got friends who will be like, I could never wear low-rise jeans, and when I see that stuff, I'm just triggered by all of the societal and like my peer the peer pressure that, like, you know, if you ate anything you were fat and you were not valued, and like these are people, like, get like this is like 20 years later, people who are still just like, I can't, you know. And I think it's just, you know, speaks to that kind of point that that shame really is like sinks in there really early and it stays with you.
It stays with you. It's a struggle. It's a fight. It's a something that you have to deal with. And so, shame, ridicule. Persons live with tolerance and learn to be patient. You grow up in a house and they talk about freedoms. They talk about people who they allow different backgrounds, different issues. You see the children coming out of those kind of backgrounds are a lot more patient. This generation has grown up with seeing more TV issues, or don't even call it TV, or whatever, flat screen stuff. I could tell what generation I grew when I used the word TV, but they have learned to see more members of the LGBTQ plus communities on TV shows and other issues, and so they have learned to be a lot more patient versus my generation. It's very common now to have Thursday night football to see black quarterbacks, when I can almost name the ones that were going through when I was a kid in the 70s, 80s. It's normal now. I've seen the first African American male president. We've seen the second woman run for president now. Was she winning? Was she not? I don't know. But this one day will be normal. Instead of saying, is she strong enough? Is she can she handle this? All the questions she's been asking. Whether she's Democrat, Republican, are not my issues. It's the fact that it's still new because we are not used to that. But people who are teaching their children at a younger level how to embrace it, it helps them to be able to deal with change. Child lives with encouragement, confidence. Okay, yeah, okay, you got a C on that one, but you can do better. You got a C? Last week was report card day. You can hear all the parents coming there. How dare you got this? You hear them screaming in the hallway when I was there. It was interesting. And all the screaming in the hallway was already teaching them about themselves, the confidence of the failures, living with praise to appreciate. Sometimes too much praise could also, how do they deal with conflict is kind of interesting. I almost could flip the other side too, but at the same time, it's cool. Fairness, justice, security, faith, approval. Of the green section here, which one stands out for you? You saw the purple ones, but the green ones.
It made me think of a video I saw once that was put out by the National Down Syndrome Association when it where the whole video was the assum was about how the assumptions you put on others is what they become, and that if you assume people will be one way, you're causing the negatives, and but that if you assume then the positive setting, then they'll have the confidence like this says and everything. It just this whole poem made me think of that video.
And a part of that is the reason why that is. Oh, well, I'm already moved my thing. That goes back to the camera because the original lens that we focus on, our original focus, is set by our family of origin. They are set to live with praise, then you see praise in others real quick. If your family sets your camera to go with hostility, you pick it up, and that cycle of fit that was just shared a few minutes ago comes out. Then the challenge is this. But before I go to my thing, I got a thought that comes up. But what else? What else stood out? Thank you for sharing that. What else stands out with you in the green section?
For me, the one that says the child that lives with encouragement learns confidence. And I can just think back to like my peer group growing up, and it was kind of like separated out, and some of us were encouraged to do well in academics, and some of us were encouraged to do well in athletics, and then that's what became of those people later. And I also think back to there was also encouragement to fight, right? To like get in aggressive fist fights with each other. And so people who were encouraged to do that learned confidence in those aggressive behaviors. So I kind of see the mix of that there too. So.
I appreciate that because of the fact that it's not only the question breaks this down to what are they being encouraged to do? And they may be encouraged to do some, and that goes back to your values and other kind of actions. They may be encouraged to do some deviant or what some people may consider deviant behavior, and that's how they learn their confidence. And then teaching somebody who's in fifth grade, their confidence, they know that they know how to play the what they call the Joneses or the dozens or whatever. They're very confident at it. Because your mama this, your daddy this, your mama, they know that within a matter of about 3 minutes, they're going to have this other fifth grader crying. They are very confident at that. They know they were. And I've had that happen because I had fifth grade was in one building and then got switched into our building where I'm in fifth grade, eighth. They were in a building just a few weeks ago where they were first through fifth. And now they got switched to a building where they are now fifth through eight within our school system, which was a mess. They should have done that. But anyway, they did. And so now the fifth grader who was good at playing the Joneses on fifth grade through first grade is now having to do that with fifth grade through eighth grade and is losing the battles. They're not as confident anymore and having to figure out another way to communicate when it's been a mess. So it depends on what they've been encouraged to do. But I see. So finding out what they've been encouraged to do is also important. Because sometimes it's been good and sometimes it hasn't been good. Finding out what they consider fairness and what they consider, it's amazing. What I used to think was fair is not necessarily fair. And that was based on the fact of my religious background, based on the fact of a few other backgrounds. I mean, you go into some religious places in schools, on Sunday school or Saturday school, and people will teach that if you don't go to this particular church, you're going to hell's fire. Or you don't live a certain way, you're going to hell's fire. So something happens to somebody, well, you know they're going to hell anyway. So you learn, you have to be careful. How does your culture, your religious background, your political background of a neighborhood, of a community, help you to dehumanize other people? I was listening to a presentation to that today. Does somebody's rhetoric, whether it's religious, whether it's political, whether it's the environmental, help them to dehumanize to somebody? So if that something happens to that person dies, something bad happens to them. Well, I don't know why you worry about her. You know, she already had five babies. No, you know, in other words, why are we worried about her? She's not a human. She had five babies. Whoopity-doo. I mean, why are we worried about them? I mean, I heard he left his wife and came out of the closet anyway. Why are we worried about him? In other words, their thinking has dehumanized that person. So something bad happens to them, whoopity-doo. Something bad happens to them, well, they're a Democrat. Something bad happens, they're a Republican. They like Trump anyway. I'm having, you know. Has our rhetoric made it so bad that we can watch another group of people, another culture die? Oh, 25 people from Hamas died. Well, they're Hamas, we don't care. 25 people from Palestine died. Oh, we care about that. Oh, we don't care about that. 25 people from Israel died. Or 25 blacks were killed in that. Oh, do we care? Do we care? 25 whites were killed. Does the concept around us make us not care or care? All that comes from my childhood. What's your thoughts before we go to our last one? See your faces for a few minutes and then I'll go to the last one. What stood out for you so far in this presentation?
Excuse my background. I'm sorry. What the background noise? I really wanted to follow what Derek said because it really resonated with me, especially things that I see with my son and a conversation that we had to have last night with praising him for not hitting someone back when he was hit. But also, what I didn't see on the other side of that is not reinforcing him, not standing up for himself at the same time. So making sure that we encourage. Does that make sense what I'm trying
I'm listening to that making sense.
to say? No, you cannot talk about it. But yeah, that what Derek said just really resonated, and it just really brought me back to the conversation yesterday of knowing how to balance both sides of teaching. Okay, no, we don't hit back, but in certain circumstances, you need to know how to protect yourself and how to defend yourself if necessary.
Well, I agree with that. I tell the kids at school, I said, now, he said, my mama taught me to fight back. I said, okay. I said, I have nothing wrong with what mama said. I said, now, while you're here at school, it's our job to help you fight back. It's my job. I said, you need to tell your teacher, I'm the social worker, tell the principal. I said, you know, I give them some things. I said, now, let me tell y'all this. You out there in that park out there, and the school's not out, I mean, school's out, and somebody does that. Either you're going to have to run as fast as you can, or you got to fight. Now, you should be out there with somebody to look out for you anyway, but sometimes you may have to stand up and fight, okay? All right, Mr. Davis. I make it real for him. Because that may be the case. I mean, sometimes I had to stand up. Sometimes I call my big sister. Boy, she could fight. She was pretty good. And so everybody knew it too. I'm going to call my brother. I'm going to call my sisters. Y'all don't want her. And other times I could tell the teacher. So teaching them to be realistic with that in their childhood. helps them to be realistic people as adults, as teachers. What else? As you, that's a stood up for you, something.
I think the concept of the camera and the picture, especially working in a school, a lot of the times the staff don't understand a full picture. And even with the extensive amount of information as a mental health clinician that I have on the background of these kids, I still don't have a full picture. And so, using that trauma-informed care and being mindful of all of these things that contribute to these kids' behaviors and experiences, emotions, and everything, I think is super important.
My principal did something several years ago, which I need to encourage him to do this year. On one of our days where we didn't have any students at the school because we had an e-learning day, we all went and got on a school bus. The whole staff got on the same bus. And he had me plot the route. And we took the bus around the neighborhoods where our kids lived. It was an eye-opening experience for a lot of people. In my school, we have some of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the city of South Bend, in the district, and also in the same area, we have some of the poorest. And when we went to certain places, people were like, "Ooh!" You could see it in their faces, their reactions, and hear it in their voices. These same kids are coming from different areas. The bus is picking them all around. And many of them didn't even live, don't even live in our city. They drive in from other parts and they work and get in their car and go home. But this was the first day that several of them got a chance to see where many of our students were living. And my goal and his goal was to help widen their camera, to just give a little better understanding of what it's like to walk. And this is where our bus route ends, and everybody who lives from here have to walk. They got to walk in rain, snow, ice, everything else. They walk. If you live from this house over, you have to walk from there to over, and it's not close. Or why those parents have a harder time coming to the parent teachers conference because of that kind of situation. Makes you understand life a little bit better. What's your thoughts? That's what you're talking about, Ms. Tucker. What y'all think about what Ms. Tucker just said? Widen your thoughts. Widen your camera.
I agree with what she says in terms of that balance, making your choices to, encourage and support your children while still telling them take care of yourself. I have a young lady that comes to me quite often that in a very similar situation, some of the houses right around the school are pretty nice. As you stack out from the school I'm at, it gets a little rougher. And her only thing is, I just want to feel normal like the other kids that were normal. I don't have nice things. I have to rotate in a one bedroom apartment with mom and mom's living boyfriend between the bed and the couch. Now, this is a girl who is a big girl. She's probably 285 pounds in the seventh grade, probably 6 foot. She's a big girl. And I asked her, what could I do that would help her feel some of that normalcy? Because she's on like a point sheet with me. We have to check in. Otherwise, I get her, she gets lost around the school. And so I surprised her with a little thing, a lip gloss. And that felt like the most normal thing to her compared to every other kid, because it was something she didn't have at that moment and not something she'd ever had, because her whole life has been bounced between family members because of incarceration. And so she just really doesn't have anything.
Amazing how many of our
Well, I
family.
gotta go to work.
Come on here, Jean.
Come on, you wanna go see Halo when she come home? Come on, let's go on, let's see how it goes. It's coming. Come
I think
on. Let's chat.
she all right. Come on here, Jean.
Who's up?
Yeah, I think so one of the things I think really resonated with me about what Ms. Tucker said was the idea of focus. And so it made me kind of think of the camera itself and how you may, in order to see an image better, change the lens in which you look at things. And so you might have to adjust things so that the picture comes up clear. And it kind of brought back the idea of like you in the school bus of like, okay, so we have these teachers who have this one view of these kids. Let's take them and we'll change the focus and we'll change the lens in which they look at the children. And so they get this different understanding of like who they actually are working with, you know? And so, and I think that can be carried on to wherever, you know, whether it's in our discipline or any discipline, but that, you know, in order to better help someone, you kind of have to look at them from different perspectives. That makes sense. Am I just rambling?
I'm not rambling. I'm not rambling. And I want you, I mean, your comments tonight and things are really on target, because it goes back to which, let me go back to one more thing right here. You've seen this. Nah, I talked about how Michael Jackson things affected him. I moved on from that. But this is what you looked at. Talking about ACEs. Your chapter talked about that. Adverse childhood experiences. About adverse childhood experiences. Really, the whole song of childhood, to me, helps to explain ACEs. Adverse childhood experience can have long-term negative impacts or long-term positive impacts. Adverse childhood experiences are common, and some groups experience them more than others. And they did this, and it helps you to look at that and study the outcomes. You'll see it. I've been to several workshops on ACEs, and I'll put that. But it helps us to look at the issues that children have gone through and how many of them have gone through. It says associated with their health, such as living under-resourced or racially segregated neighborhoods, can cause toxic stress. And then I'm going to tell you this. It's a very interesting concept. Sometimes I am for integration. But another person shared with me, this older guy, he said he was for desegregation, not integration. And that was, if people want to live in a white neighborhood, they can live in a white neighborhood. If people want to live in a black neighborhood, they can live in a black neighborhood. But what happened with integration, they shut down, closed down many of the black schools, and they integrated them with the white schools. The black principals became the white teachers. And so in many of your urban black neighborhoods, the shops went out, the malls went out, the barbers went out. And now in most cities, you have very few black. Well, we still have the funeral homes and still have that. But most of the hair care products are by a different race or the things. And it really wiped out black or African-American businesses by integration. Does that mean that I'm for segregation? By no means. But in the interplay of all of that, a lot of things got wiped out. And so while they say that racially segregated areas, the word segregated is the issue of where people are not allowed to live. But what has happened is some of the integration, when people move into a predominantly white neighborhood, they don't see anybody like themselves, then that it leads to another problem. Because in my school, it's predominantly African-American and Hispanic. So when a white person is being picked on, they're truly being picked on even more so over there because they're a minority in my school. And so it's very interesting. I have to be aware of that, because when they ganged up on kids, it really is. And other times you will see where the African-American is the minority. And other times it's the Hispanic or whatever your group of population are that makes up your school. And so each one of these things, when you are living with people outside of your group, that is also interesting from those standpoints. Sometimes people feel safer living within their groups, like was already stated. But those are some kind of the issues that take historical groups, social groups. When you live around everybody in your family is Republican, everybody in your family is independent, everybody in your family is Baptist or Catholic and everything else. And then you come home and you bring in home a woman who's Church of God in Christ, or you bring in somebody who goes to church on a different day. The shunning that goes on in families is amazing. So all that comes out of our childhood experiences, those 0 to 17 years of age. So it's good to understand the whole ACEs issues and see how many things that people have experienced when they're younger. And some of those things are positive, some of those things are challenging. And I'll tell you this, I grew up in a middle-class two-parent house with people who are doctorates and college professors, and sounds wonderful, sounds interesting, but that my background can also mess me up. Because how then do I look at a family whose mom has 5, 6, 7 kids, has mom's finished 9th grade, if that, has 5 kids by 5 different people? Sometimes it's not the camera, sometimes it's the photographer. Sometimes the photographer, my training is great, but my view of my training is the problem where my biases are coming in.
I'm so glad we got there. It was like something that I wrote down, because the line that I liked was being taught approval to like oneself. And then like I was connecting that to just this whole metaphor with the camera. Like I wrote down, I was like, who's holding the camera though? And like, what lens are they, like, how are they reading the footage? All of that matters. And like, that's us as the social worker. Like, how are we learning to read the imagery that is being captured as we look through that camera? And then also the responsibility on us to model the behavior and how we do that when we navigate the world and when we do our work.
I had to learn to appreciate the fact that boyfriend many times was the father. And that's okay. Because my first thing is, why is boyfriend showing up in the meeting? Because I grew up in a house where dad and my boyfriend is just as important in this house. And it may be a multiple boyfriends that show up, or maybe multiple people that show up, a grandmother shows up. What is my bias about kids being raised by grandparents or being raised by, looking at all these other things come up. And so how, the way the camera is being held by me, had to adjust. I had to learn different things. Because sometimes having a middle class, upper class background can help you, and then other times it hurts you. Or then having coming from a quote unquote lower socioeconomic class, and now you're working with kids who are in the suburb, you're like, why are they complaining? What pain do they have? I mean, they got a nice car, they got a nice house, they got all this stuff, they can go here, they can go here. Why are they coming in to me complain? So sometimes when you grow up in a more impoverished situation, you cannot hear the pain of somebody who's coming from more of a wealthy background. And then sometimes you grew up in a wealthy background, you cannot hear the pain of somebody who's coming in a low socioeconomic background. And so in my own, I always tell people to check your cell phone again. In my cell phone, if everybody in my cell phone looks like me, thinks like me, do I have all Democrats in mind? Are they all African-American? Are they all social work related? Are they all cheering on Harris this weekend? Do I have some people cheering on Trump in my phone? Do I have people that are divorced, married, single, and all that, different colors? The more my phone is diverse, the better I can relate to the world. And I can hear different issues. I can see different things. Do I delete everybody who's saying garbage? Boy, sometimes I want to delete everybody who's saying that. Vote blue. But what about the ones who are saying vote red on my thing? Whew. Can I handle them? And that's the challenge of me, because I have to serve a wider group of people. And I sometimes go to mass at different places. And other times I go to Church of God in Christ. And other times I was at a Presbyterian church this past Saturday, funeral there, spoke there. Okay. So I go to a variety of different places just to challenge my thought. So the photographer will not mess up the camera that may be working well. Nothing wrong with the camera, nothing wrong with all the social work skills and everything else we're teaching you. It's the photographer that has to be challenged.
What you said made me think of a situation I end up in when working with a client. I was working with someone who was homeless, and who had been homeless, and I made a comment about why didn't you just go to a shelter, because I have always told shelters are good. And she said that in where I live, a shelter is more unsafe than just living on the streets, and I never would have thought that.
Yeah. Shelter's more unsafe. How do you handle? I mean, then not all the shelters are best. It's an interesting thing. We just automatically think, go to shelter, go here, go to that person's house. I mean, go get in line, go get food stamps, go get this, go get that. It's so much of an academic experience for us. What happens when it becomes real life for us? When I had to go on unemployment for a situation, I was unemployed, and I tell you, I sat in that car for a long while in that parking lot. Is anybody going to recognize me? And I walk in, aren't you the one? Yes, I'm the one. When the social worker has to go get help, it's something else. Yeah. So again, not only making sure my camera's great, but also dealing with how I look at life.
Just makes me think of the Man in the Mirror song again, you know?
That's why I start out with my Man in the Mirror song. That's my anchor song, you know? I got to look at the mirror, and then as I look at the mirror, then I come and start assessing my childhood. Got another song for you next few weeks there. I go through the whole Jackson thing, you know? And so... Felt like I was using my last song today after so much loss, but I stayed on point. We hear four people. It's 8:23. We hear four people. What stood out for them tonight as they looked at where is my their childhood or our conversation? Or have you seen my childhood? What's your thoughts? Four people. Who would be number one? What stood out for you? Somebody tell us what stood out for you tonight.
This is for anything that we heard tonight, or just the song?
Everything we heard tonight. Everything we heard.
I songs really playing,
conversations. What you heard from other learners in the class?
I really like. I don't remember the name of it, but the purple and the green. I really took a lot away from it, especially the conversation, and then like really applying it to my child when I was in education, how that, like, you know, how that looks. Also, like, moving forward in the work that I do now, like making sure that I am like the example that we said about encouragement. I'm encouraging the correct way.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, that's huge. Looking at that, I've seen that poem I learned years ago, and I still assess myself of that, because I assess myself for the children I see, and then I assess that poem as I look at me in the mirror to say, why am I being so critical on this issue? Why am I being so hard on that issue? And oftentimes it's because of the way I was raised. And that goes back to not only being raised and being critical on others, it's critical on my own self. Because even though people are dead, and I can still hear them yelling at me or fussing at me, and now and they're gone, and I'm still fighting that issue. And a lot of times what people are fighting from, when talking about a Halloween thing, a ghost from the past, a grandmother's voice, you this, you bad, you this. And without thinking about it, they pass that on to other generations. That's how many generational curses are done. So thank you for sharing that. What else stood out for you? Number two. We got one down, two to go.
I appreciated the moments, and it's sticking with me, just about flipping through my phone and looking at my photos or my social media and things like that, and what level of diversity is in these things. Even if I don't hold the same value or the same belief, or even if I'm coming from a completely different perspective than another person, still the openness to be able to have space for it, respect that there's divergent thinking in the world, if you will, and that if I do cut myself off from those information channels, I'm limiting exposure, and I'm limiting my ability to
We'll go back, like, you know, expand to like a more panoramic picture, foot or frame as I look through my camera kind of thing.
When I teach policy classes too, and I have to really guard myself as I grade different learners' paper, because if they are coming from more of a Republican point of view, and I'm a left-wing Democrat, am I fair with their paper? Have I allowed them to argue their paper? Or is their grade based on the fact that they are Republican, or is their grade based on the fact that they have covered the content? And I have to make sure that it's the content and not because they are arguing from a Republican point of view, because that's not fair. Republicans and Democrats and independents should be able to have the same ability to get an A in my class and move forward. And I have to assess that self every time. So thank you. Two things tomorrow. We're almost done. What's it out?
I think that for me, I talking about APS as well, I guess kind of realizing that just because of the way I live, might be clean, it might be a, you know, more organized house, and going into a home that's not the best and not the most cleanly, that just because, you know, it's not up to my standards doesn't mean that that's not up to their standards. And I think too, when I think it was Trinidad that was mentioning like the name thing, you know, we have cases that come in, you know, we've had them open 30, 40 times in adult protection. And I too will look at the name and be like, mm-hmm. All right, here we go again. But I think that because of being a social worker and because of all these classes that I've been taking, learning to, I guess, see like a different perspective and like, okay, well, clearly this didn't happen or this didn't work last time. So what can I do this time that might have a better outcome? Or they're coming in 30 different times for a reason. So how can I prevent that? Instead of being so quick to judge and saying, well, you didn't follow through with this. Well, there's a reason why they probably didn't follow through. So yeah, I guess I kind of like that aspect of the class.
Cool. All righty. Thank you. Learning our backgrounds and how we differ and how we don't, how that helps us is important. Closes out. Final thought. We're at 8:29. Make it brief.
I feel like that's a lot of pressure, but I was going to bounce off of that. Coming from also like a child protection service background, working in foster care, similar to what you were saying, where like boyfriend comes into the picture, or like there's different people that come into the picture for children. Those children, like the adults in their life, mean a lot to them sometimes, regardless of the amount of abuse that they've experienced. And a lot of times we're really quick to point fingers and, you know, not try to understand and kind of bash those parents. But those are like major adults in like kids' lives. And I often have to remind foster parents in our program, like, to remember to put yourself in their shoes and try to understand their perspective as well.
And next week, well, our next presentation in week's number 6, we're going to talk about a lot of that, because we have to do that. So I said at the beginning, those who may need to stay on afterwards for some challenges and groups, feel free to do that. Or you can still feel free to email me. I'm going to try to work out this situation, because I do recognize that some of you have had some challenges with some of your groups, and we'll work through everybody so we can all get out here successfully. And if some assignments are a little later than I really wanted them to be, I'll live with it, because we got to get done. So I have to learn to be more patient myself. So I'm cool. I appreciate you understanding our childhood issues, and we look forward to heading down Jackson Way in 2 more weeks. Thanks for coming tonight. I appreciate y'all.
Having you.
I'm recording.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Good night.